ain't the kind to wear a tie. Button up from 9 to 5. I tried that life but said goodbye. I'm not always polite, but I get the job done. Who says that work can never be fun? I'm simply unprofessional.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Simply Unprofessional. I am your host, Webby, and joining me tonight, we got Devin.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
And that's all. We had no one else step in this week, but that's okay. We're going to continue with our second part of Supernatural September here, Devin. We're going to talk about witches. When you think of witch, what do you think of?
When I think of witch, I have two direct witch correlations in my head. When you say witches, I think one of two things, right? I think the Wicked Witch of the West from Wizard of Oz, or I think, you know, the more, I guess, modern, commonly accepted witch, which is looks like everybody else and is a relatively regular, but possesses powers.
Right.
But in my mind, I always usually jump to, like, you know, green skin and that kind of stuff. Just because
long nose, warts.
Yeah, just because I can. You know, just because I can. It's one of those things. I do it because I can.
Yep.
But I know it's not really. 9 times out of 10 when someone says witch, it's not what they're envisioning.
Right. Now, you say somebody who has powers, so to speak. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, elaborating on the powers, it kind of varies. You know, there's some media witches have their powers are pretty well defined and what they can and can't do. And then there's other medias where pretty much if you can think it, they can do it. And everything in between. So, but usually their powers for the most part are relatively well defined. Some witches may have a primary power. So like, for instance, they may have I guess all witches universally have the power to cast spells, you know, spell casting of some degree. Some may have like what's called personal powers, powers that they have that they can kind of cast without incantations and things like that. So you're looking at things maybe like, telekinesis, things like that, maybe, or a variety of, you know, pyrokinesis, fireballs, whatever you want to. Under the sun, whatever you think about. And those are more personal kind of rapid fire powers, you know, or if you want to use D&D terms, like your cantrip, so to speak. That's kind of like their cantrip. They have it in the bag. And then they can kind of use spells or incantations to kind of go all over the place and wherever they need to go. Don't know if I actually answered what you were looking for, but
no, you did. And the key word there was spells, magic. Things along those lines. Now, I started researching a little bit, and I know that sounds awfully professional of me. I quite literally researched for like 10 minutes, and then I stumbled upon an epiphany here. Like, I stumbled upon a little thing where witchcraft, witches, out of all of the things that we're going to be talking about, or out of the variety of things that we're going to be talking about during Supernatural September here, this is the by far the most broad. And it even says so. It says witchcraft or witchery broadly means the practice of and belief in magical skills and abilities that are able to be exercised by individuals and certain social groups. Now, they have dated back so far, and the thing is like, in real-life terms, there hasn't been any cases of of witchcraft actually being able to, like, that's why, you know, scientists are all against, you know, are all opposed to it, because scientifically they can describe and prove what they're doing. Witches can't. But does that mean that witches aren't currently practicing? No. Modern day witches, or they actually have a name, and I don't want to fuck it up. I know Wiccans are one of them. But the other one is... Yeah. I don't know. I had just had this. It's literally something along the line... Oh, traditional witchcraft. A traditional witch is also what they're known as today. Yeah, I mean, not only does it go back so far in history, but witchcraft spreads over almost every country, throughout almost every religion. Like, it is probably the most broad supernatural thing that we could have chose to talk about. So instead of going really in depth on, you know, real life accounts of witches, things like the Salem witch trials, which we will end up doing another SU on by itself, because that was a big thing in general. We're going to talk more about witches that we know from media. Things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Willow was a witch. In fact, I think she even said that she was Wiccan in that show.
True, she was. I believe she started off the first series, the first season, like the first few seasons. She was, I want to say, Catholic or right. Christian. Then she realized she was a witch. And then I think through the one chick they turned into a mouse, she realized, I believe, she was a witch. And then Tara was the mouse. The other chick turned her there. Then she realized her witchcraft potential, flipped the script, turned Tara back. Tara then started teaching her magic more. And then when she fell into the Wiccan religious circle at that point.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen Buffy, but I think that's right.
So, lost my train of thought there. So, older, I guess we could say, media that we're used to, because I grew up watching Buffy. Two more notable current media, you have things like, I'm going to get my ass chewed out of if I don't mention it, since we're talking about witches and magic, the Harry Potter series. That's a whole fucking school full of kids who can do magic.
Yep, it's true.
Now, that brings me to another interesting question that I have for you, Devin.
Ooh.
Now, technically, I read you the definition of witchcraft and witchery, technically. Which just means the broad practice of and belief in magical skills. Do you think that there is a difference between all of the various people who do believe in these magical arts? Or would they all be lumped under witches or practitioners of witchcraft and then subcategorized? So, what I mean by that is, you know, we have witches, obviously. And then you have things like wizards, sorcerers, warlocks. All of these subcategories of magical practitioners.
I absolutely do. I absolutely do think they all fall under the same category as witches. Very much in the same kind of way, there's different... I guess different types of magic. Like, if you want to really go down this rabbit hole, we could do probably a whole series on these. Go down this rabbit hole of, you know, like necromancy or blood magic or sacrificial magic. You know, you want to go down all those different blood paths, you know, but at the root of it all, they're still magic. Mm-hmm. So I would say they are one and the same, kind of like a using a tree. If magic and witches are like the trunk, they're kind of all the branches. They're still part of the tree, though. Overall, I mean, unless I mean, and I guess it also kind of depends on the media. The media in which you fall in. If, for instance, they hard define a witch as someone who has to invoke spells, and then let's say like a warlock or a sorcerer is someone who gets their spells innately, and they set a clear difference, and there's things that one can do that the other one can't do on both sides, I would say then they're different. But I think in this the broad spectrum, if you're painting with a broad brush, I would say you could put them all under the same category.
Okay. Now, one thing, it all changes with, not necessarily age, but like when we grew up. Like when we were kids, I was more so under the impression, based off the movies and stuff that I watched, that a warlock is essentially just a male witch.
Yes. I was very much under the same presentation. You rarely saw witches in television, especially my day, and by extension your day as well. Witches were never really portrayed as male too often. They were, if it was a male witch, they were a warlock, they were a sorcerer, they were a wizard.
Yeah.
They were something like that. They were never portrayed as a witch. And the witch was specifically a female term. But as, you know, as we've advanced as society and just, you know, gender equality and gender neutrality through over time, which I guess even not even throughout time, because even back in like the Salem witch trial days, you could, you know, men that were burned and men that were accused were referred to as witches as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess it was something that kind of got adapted to refer to women.
There was just far less of them.
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know, it got adapted over time. Witchcraft, you know, witch and witchcraft was a blanket term used for everybody. And then as you moved forward around, you know, I don't know what time exactly. I didn't do that much heavy research because, I mean, come on now, it's simply a professional. We don't do research like that. But as you move forward, it kind of became a separation. It became a, you know, a warlock and a witch, or a witch and a sorcerer, or a witch and a wizard kind of a thing. Usually witch and wizard are the two that are differentiated, or you'll have like, to be specific, usually what wound up happening was you had a witch, a wizard, and then you'd have a sorcerer and a warlock, which are kind of like, the warlocks were like the evil witches, the evil male witches.
Right.
And then the sorcerer was kind of like the rebel.
Right.
Of all. And that's kind of how that was usually painted in most things.
And see, as things change with age and generation, I guess is the word I was looking for before. Like we said, warlocks were just essentially male witches when we were younger. Now, when I think warlock, especially since we come from such a heavy D&D background, and like I play games like World of Warcraft, which you know they have warlocks in there. Warlocks are always painted as people who acquired magical capabilities through making pacts with some form of demon or higher powered creature.
And to just throw something in there real quick, warlock, looking it up on Wikipedia, thank you Wikipedia, a warlock is a male practitioner of evil magic, distinguished from a wizard or sorcerer whose magic may be benign. The most commonly accepted etymology derives warlock from the Old English werloga, possibly, which roughly translates to oathbreaker or deceiver.
Hmm.
However, in early modern Scots, the word came to be used as the male equivalent of witch, which can be male or female, but is used predominantly for females. From this use, the word passed into romantic literature and ultimately 20th century popular culture, a derivation. I can't talk today. My throat's killing me. Of Old Norse. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. It means Varolokur. Varolokur. Okay. Means caller of spirits. Has also been suggested.
Yeah. And see, that's another thing that's changed over time, too, is witches, especially, you know, obviously back in, like, the 1600s and prior, they were viewed as things like devil worshippers and, you know, people who, if you claimed that you were a witch, it was a very negative term. Now, as time grew on, this changed. It became more accepted over time. I mean, Wiccans now practice openly. And the churches, even some, I will say, I'm sure there are still some that are set in the old ways. Some churches now even accept, you know, witchcraft as an ideal. Because they're, you know, natural healers. They're spiritual healers. They're big into the folk medicine and calling on elements and spirits. And it has a very, I guess, religious, you know, sect to it. Which, it's weird how... I mean, I guess it's not weird. Everything changes with time, but, like, from the 1600s, the second somebody says, oh, you're a witch, we literally hung them or burnt them at the stake or, you know, whatever. And nowadays, it's, you know, accepted. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with that rant.
It went somewhere.
Yep. Sure did.
I don't know. So did you want to dive into talking about some of the media or some of the specifics of some of the shows that we mentioned throughout the conversation we've had here?
Yes.
Do you want to dive into that?
And we can go into some of the separations even from like D&D or video games, so on and so forth.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, let's start with media. I want to say, I know we mentioned Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I want to say that was really one of the earlier memories that I can think of being exposed to that.
I think for me it would be Charmed.
I watched Buffy before Charmed.
Well, okay, so if you really wanted to dive back, I think I watched Xena before all of them.
Oh, yeah, and Hercules.
Hercules and Xena before all of them, and then they had to spin off like Young Hercules. But we're not
getting
that.
I'm sure they had witches and stuff. In
oh yeah, they did. I mean, they did. If they didn't have witches per se, I know they definitely had spells.
Right.
They definitely had they had magic. Magic was in the world. They and people actively used it. So yeah,
All right. Well, then let's do this because you could literally name anything, and I'm sure that they've referenced a witch somewhere. So let's do this. When you think of witch, give me your top three names that pop in your head.
Or top, when I think of
top
witch,
three people or whatever.
Top three people or like top three universes?
Let's go with what do you mean by universes?
Like, are we talking like Buffy, that kind of thing? Or are you want like specific names?
Let's go with specific names first.
Okay,
because I'm sure by doing specific names, that's also going to probably answer the universe as well.
It probably most likely will. When you say you have the names that pop into my head only because they're the most recent, and I have to probably not even some of them are actually not the most recent. I go with the Hallowells. Just using TV. I'm not gonna dive into books and stuff right now, but off TV off the top of my head, the Hallowell sisters from Charmed, Willow from Buffy. And then probably Rowena from Supernatural. I'm avoiding Vampire Diaries.
I was just going to say, two of those names are on my list, but one of them's from Vampire Diaries.
I'm avoiding Vampire Diaries in the originals, because if I did, it'd be like Davina, and I'm like, I'm avoiding that for right now. If we're doing a five list, then they're on there, but right now we're doing three, so I'm avoiding that for right now.
Yeah, my top three that are just like first ones that come to mind would be Willow, obviously, Rowena, and then Bonnie Bennett.
Yep.
So, now that's interesting, because two of yours and one of, and all three of mine are technically witches who worked solo for the most part. I know Rowena had like a background who, you know, she worked with others and stuff, but she branched out on her own. You know, Charmed, they were just three sisters who worked together.
Yes.
Now, a big thing in, like, say, Bitten, I want to say season two, is when they started introducing all the witches.
Yep.
A big thing with witches are their covens.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you know about covens, Devin?
Again, with witchcraft, like, you're so broad, but usually, you know, covens are usually, the easiest way to describe it is a witch family.
Yeah,
it's a, and not like, you don't have to be blood related. Sometimes you are blood related. Sometimes you have like mob mentality amongst covens, but usually a coven is just a, similar to tying in the last week, because I'm a unprofessional professional, similar to a pack. You know, a pack, and there's usually a leader of the coven or a leader of the pack. In that case, that would be the alpha. So you have the leader of the coven, and there's usually, you know, other followers in the coven. Then they all practice, you know, and sometimes it's broken up with the type of magic they practice. Some, you know, they may, one coven may practice primarily necromancy, or may practice, you know, kind of spiritualistic nature magic. And then one coven may be, you know, practices very, you know, white magic or dark magic or whatever, you know. But anyway, but the point being is, of the coven, is they are a kind of a witch family, and or a witch extension of your family. They're, you know, they act as teachers, as friends, and depending on the media, sometimes as a power source. You know, covens usually together are stronger. To bring up Vampire Diaries again, you know, there is cases of witches at least temporarily forming covens or having entire covens, but they'll temporarily form a coven and will link all their powers together and channel them through one witch. So you have one witch with the powers of like 10 or 15 witches at one time. So you get some really interesting things out of that. So I mean, covens are kind of, I mean, they kind of vary media to media, because you could say like the Halliwell sisters themselves are a coven. You know, they're a three person coven, and some, you know, some media just, you know, they don't, you rarely see a number put on a coven. You could have a coven of, you know, two people.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question for you, is how many members does it take to actually establish a coven?
I've never seen it specifically stated, like in a lot of media, they rarely state it like, okay, you need five members to form a coven. You know, it's rare. I think there was one media specifically where that actually was the case, where, because they were doing magic over a pentagram, and you had to have at least one person standing on each end of the, on each point of the pentagram, their imports making it five people to make a coven, but that's not the point of what I'm talking about right now. 99% of media out there, I don't believe, actually put a hard number on what it takes to be a coven. You could have a coven of two, you could have a coven of 200.
Oh, according to this, there are actually even online covens. Way to go.
There you go.
Way to go, Electronic Age.
There you go. You can coven in your chat board, in your chat rooms.
Which you could get at the online arm of the Church of Universal Eclectic Wicca.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so those are our top three witches. I mean, I guess. I mean, technically you chose three as one, but I'll let it slide.
I mean, I just kind of threw that in there. I mean, you could kind of rotate it on either way. If I had to pick one, I'd say Alyssa Milano because I just find her hot. But, you know, so what is who is.
Agreed.
You know.
Except when they had. She was Phoebe. Except when they had the other sister who stepped in.
Billy or Rose. Billy, you mean late season or
it was played by Rose McGowan.
Okay. Yeah,
I just don't remember her character's name.
Paige?
It was Paige?
It was Paige.
Wait, was she a different Paige?
No, she's same Paige. It was
they just changed the actress?
No. You're thinking of Piper. There's Piper, Phoebe,
and Paige.
Prue, oh, yeah. You're thinking of Prue.
Okay.
Prudence. Okay, so it was Prue, Piper, Phoebe. Prue died, and then Paige came into the picture.
Okay.
And then Paige temporarily died, or somebody temporarily died.
Yeah.
And then they brought Billy in, and then it went downhill.
Yeah, no one cares about Billy.
I mean, she's all right.
You hear that, Billy? No one cares about you. Billy.
It's true.
Oh, yeah. No, I was asked also to give another shout out this week, but this one, a different person. Yeah, this one goes to Cliff, another coworker of mine, who got awfully jealous that Dester was getting shout outs.
Webby, you know, as a co-host, I mean, you do what you want at your show. I'm just going to say, if these people are really fans, why are we giving shout outs for free? You know,
I mean, that's true. They should be emailing.
They need to be emailing something. Come on now.
True. But at the same time, you don't have to work with them.
That's true.
So,
I mean, I have to work with you. And so by default, I'll get your shit because you control the fate of like 12 of my characters at this point. I don't even know how many characters it is. I can say 12 safely because I'm pretty sure it's.
Are any of them spellcasters?
There are.
Well, we're gonna have a Salem witch trial throughout Distractions Media. I'm gonna burn all the spellcasters.
Oh God! Let me hold on. Wait. Hold up.
It's just gonna be a group of fighters, monks, and
now
barbarians.
Wait, are we talking about any characters?
Yeah, all of them.
Okay, well then, wait. They're do I have dead. A character that's safe? I fucking don't have a character that's safe. Then
nope, you're dead.
You start Gerard out of the picture. Kyrian's out of the picture. Roy's out of the picture. Atticus is out of the picture. CJ's out of the picture. By extension, Scythe's out of the picture. Who else is out of the picture? My character in the pack's out of the picture.
Now, technically, CJ and Scythe. Now, that's a good question. Because they don't necessarily use magic. Because the whole thing with those Fate games is that we're essentially special humans. Like we have superpowers.
Well, I know
but
you
that's
don't.
That's not necessarily magic.
Did you listen to the what you call it?
Probably not.
Okay, so in Warden of Emmanuel, I'm just going to.
Oh, I've listened to quite a few of those ones.
Okay, so I mean, you know, Scythe is a full on Emmanuel.
Yeah.
So Scythe's full on Emmanuel. His entire since he lived, he grew up in a primitive society.
But he's also he's alien. That's not magic.
It's not. But I'm going to throw that in there because there is a stipulation with his power, in which case me and John were talking about because he grew up in a time that could not describe his power because he grew up in a very primitive society, in which point his power was described as witchcraft. So effectively, Scythe when he met was effectively the court wizard or one of the court wizards.
All right, he did. He gone.
And the thing is, I set up with John was one of his flaws was that one of his troubles was he was in fact a wizard. He thought he was a wizard. So he had to believe in his magic. So if he did something and rolled poorly and it failed, he would never attempt it again because he didn't think he'd had the power to do so.
Mm.
So that's how I played that with him. It's a little bit different now. So, like, CJ might get the pass. CJ might get the pass. But if Scythe's dead, then CJ loses that part of his power anyway. So then CJ's back to... CJ's dead. Because CJ needs Scythe to stay alive. So, yeah, they're both gone. I was right. Webby just killed off, I think, every one of my characters.
Now, wait, you still have technically the one that you gave up, right? The gun shooting guy?
He did.
Oh, he did. All right. He gone.
Webby just killed off all my characters.
Well, I didn't kill that one. He died somewhere else then.
Well, I mean, effectively, you killed off all my characters, which is fine. Which is fine. I mean, yeah, to be fair, I've been trying
roll
to kill
Atticus. Roll a fighter.
Atticus. Fuck it. I've been trying to kill Atticus for the longest time.
See,
I tried to kill.
You admit it. You admit it. You want him to die.
I admit it openly, so you ignore me. Because if you think killing my characters will cause me joy, you never give me what I want.
Nope.
You know, unless I absolutely beg you for it, and then you do. So if I just keep saying, like, oh, man, thank you, please kill my character, eventually you're just going to be like, well, fuck it, we're not going to do it. One day you're going to call my bluff and kill a character. I prepared myself mentally for this.
Oh.
I don't know if I can prepare myself mentally.
I didn't kill all your characters.
Which character didn't you kill?
The Game of Distractions one.
That's true, you didn't. You didn't kill him. He survives.
Yet. Until Melisandre teaches him magic and then he just dies.
Like, God damn it. Not like this.
Well, okay, since we're talking about role-playing games and especially like the ones that we play for the podcasts, yes. D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Like half of the classes are spellcasters of one form or another. What is your favorite spellcasting class?
My favorite spellcasting class in D&D is, I would say universally, because across all the games, just to blanket it in there, I'd have to say a sorcerer. And the only reason why that is, you know, in 3.5, sorcerers were very blasty. They were very much like the damage dealers. And that's pretty much stayed true because they haven't had access to meta magic, which basically is just feats or abilities that amplify their magic in some way, shape, or form. But I always like thematically how the sorcerers work. So, for instance, we were talking about earlier, rolling this back into earlier, wizards in D&D are described as the studious incantation based mages. So they have like their spell book and they've studied their lives away learning these spells. And a sorcerer very much is just the magic's in his blood. For some reason, he's inherited this magic. Like in 5th edition specifically, because that's the most current one I can think of, there's subclasses that say, there's a dragon in your lineage. So you inherited your magic blood came from the fact that you have a dragon somewhere in your lineage. You're a dragon sorcerer. And as you go through, you'll start gaining like little draconic abilities. But that gives you a nice, they have kind of built in backstory in a sense. In the fact that, these characters are, there's magic in their blood. Well, why is there magic in their blood? They have that. Then they have, later net in, like, they have the wild mage, which is just, you can flavor that however you want. You can just say, hey, you know what? I was a prophesized birth. I was whatever I am. And, you know, you have this uncontrollable magic power within you. That if you're not careful, you lose control of it.
That's the one where if at any time you cast a spell,
the DM
can tell you to roll a D100.
Yep.
Yeah, I like that one.
Then there's the Storm Sword.
That's the one where if I'm in a really bad mood and you guys put a hair across my ass, I can just be like, all right, even when you roll, when you're casting cantrips, I don't give a fuck. Every time you cast a spell, roll a D100. Something bad's bound to happen.
Yep. Yep. And I think that's what Austin's character is, isn't he?
I honestly don't know.
In Mainland Rumble?
Yeah, I honestly don't know.
It's not. I mean, I know Austin loves Chaos Magic, so I'm assuming that's going to be a yes.
If it is, then that game's going to get a whole lot more interesting. Because I have not had him roll, so.
And then you have the Storm Sorcerer, which I believe at one point were descended from Elementals. So you have sorcerers kind of have the magic in their blood. By default, after Sorcerer, my next option is Druid. I love Druids. I feel Druids are, they get their power. That is the one complaint I have about D&D as opposed to other game systems where magic is, where I've experienced magic in other systems, like RuneQuest, for instance. Effectively, all the magic in D&D feels the same. A lot of the spells are just kind of like reflavored of the same spell. Whereas RuneQuest, there's different... Each magic, each tree of magic, so like druid magic or cleric magic or whatever, you know, divine magic, holy magic, whatever, dark magic, whatever you want to flavor it, their dice mechanics are different. All their spells are different. There's less of them, but what they do, they're a little bit more versatile, and what they do is, you know, different enough where you can, they don't feel the same. So you could have, you know, you can make up an entire party of mages that are from different trees of magic,
right?
And you won't play the same. You know, they won't play the same. Like, one is like percentile based, one is like roll under based, and like there's different. So you have these different feels to the magic, and different, you could accomplish different things with them. And I think that's really cool. D&D, a lot of the magic feels kind of the same, but then D&D, a lot of the combat feels kind of the same. It's just kind of, you know, rolling dice and making things happen. That's kind of a different conversation at this point, but, you know, yeah. But I mean, so the second, if I had to pick one, sorcerer for sure. I love their spell list. It's useful enough where you can kind of get by. You know, there's enough utility on that list, especially in 5th edition, because there's a lot of utility spells and cantrips.
Right.
So if you pick up some more cantrips, you can do a lot of utility stuff with cantrips without ever having really to worry about your spells.
Right. And see, then that's why druids and bards are my favorite, just because of the fact that they're so utility.
I love bards. Bards are great. I love bards specifically more so in 3.5 as their spell list, because I feel like the bard, while he is martially adept and can fight, I still like when I want to play a bard that's more of a spellcaster, or like, you know, I want to play the bard that's in the back of the line playing on like a fiddle, excuse me, playing a fiddle and casting spells that way. But I feel like in 5th edition, a lot of the spells are very, you know, they're a lot of saving spells, a lot of, you know, they work fine. They work for what they do, but the bard is more about buffing the party, where in 3.5, you could go either route. You could buff the party, or you could deal damage, or you could, you know, really incapacitate your opponent. But that was just because that's mainly because of the dynamic of the spells. Where 3.5, they were very much spells that were save or die, or save or extremely suck.
Yeah.
So if you fucked up a spell, or if you rolled a spell correctly and the enemy fucked up, they were basically dead. If they weren't dead, they were basically dead. Where in 5th edition, there are some save or suck spells, but usually that's about as far as it gets. And I don't mean like disintegrate, where it just says, oh, if they're under 150 HP, they just die. That's not what I mean. Or power word kill. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, the effect of the spell is so dire. And with how saving works in 5th edition, you know, it's more balanced. It is more balanced flatline, how saving works, where it's like, if this person gets hit, they get a saving throw. If this happens, they get a saving throw. The saving throws are relatively easy to make. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you get a little bit more of a balancing thing. But, yeah, absolutely. So, to answer the question, sorcerer, number one, druid, number two, and then probably toss up between bard and... Bard and Warlock for three.
All right. Yeah, I don't know how I would do mine. I know druids and bards are on my list of top three, obviously.
I think clerics are number one.
Yeah.
Clerics are great, too, because you can make a cleric literally that does anything, especially if your DM doesn't really riot you too hard about about the deity you worship and whether or not they're aligned with the party.
Right.
But you can very much make a cleric that feels like a wizard, or very much make a cleric that feels like a sorcerer, make a cleric that feels like a bard. You know, you can do a lot of stuff. Like, you can pick Ouija's as your deity and get access to the magic domain, which opens up a lot of the wizard spells. So cleric is really versatile on the spell list casting because they have the... I can't think of the features, what it's called right now, but they're very versatile. There you go. They're very versatile on that respect, but you know,
Yeah, I think I'd have to rank mine cleric, druid, bard. If I had to put them in order. I don't know, I just always liked my I always liked playing a cleric. Like, a lot of people feel like they don't need cleric. Like, clerics are, like, one of those, like, classes that a lot of people think, oh, well, if we're going to need a healer, I'd rather just play a druid or a bard. Which, yes, they do have access to healing magic and stuff, but not on the scale that clerics do. I just think clerics are very underappreciated as a class. So,
I can say this, as a person that plays clerics, specifically that plays a healing cleric in fifth edition, that argument I think stands true. You really don't need a lot of healing in fifth edition with the addition of hit dice.
Well, if you guys really feel that way, I will make things so much harder on you then.
And that's fine. That's fine. But if you look at the sheer number of people who can heal in our party, and if really it boils down to how your party plays it.
Right. But I mean, a cleric, you're always meant to spend your healing spells in combat. Because you can't spend hit dice unless you take take a short rest, which based off your DM, it's either a half hour to an hour.
Right. But the thing is this. So it boils down. All right, let me rephrase what I'm saying. The addition of a cleric who's basically playing just a healing cleric, and me and you have had this conversation before, where I carried Atticus over from 4th edition to 5th edition. He was a healing cleric in 4th edition, which had a lot more different, which played a lot differently than in 5th edition. 5th edition healing cleric, a lot of my extra healing spells and healing abilities, I never really even need.
Right.
Especially with the addition of me having like the healing staff. You know, that gives me, I can heal 20, like 10 or 20 charges a day and still get, I think I get a D10 back or a D8 back every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I can heal off that without using any spell slots. I have the spell slots to heal, but then having all the extra. So if I could go back to Atticus and make one change on Atticus, I would take off the healing domain as his domain. There we go. His domain. I would remove healing domain and I would go light domain, or I would go, yeah, I'd probably go light domain.
I'm really surprised that Atticus wasn't light domain to begin with.
Well, the reason why I went healing domain is I was carrying him straight over from 4th edition. In 4th edition, he was in the healing domain. But as I realized in 5th edition, as they were diving deeper in 5th edition, you really don't need that level of healing unless your DM's a total dick. And, like, you're the only healer in the party. Which, to an extent, I am kind of the only healer in the party. But when you break down the party, let's break down the party. You have Brenna, who basically has over 200 health.
She's just an HP sponge.
Yeah, she has over 200 health effectively. There.
But no heals.
No heals. You have Talon, who also heals. Somewhat. Not
slight.
Crazy. He has healing. He has healing. But that's the thing, though. He has healing. You have me. If you remove that away out of the party, if you remove my healing domain stuff, I can still heal the entire party in combat and out of combat and have spell slots to spare. Then you add in, who else do we have? I'm trying to think. Who else do we have? I'm blanking on people.
We have Astonis.
Astonis, who until recently never really got hit. He gets hit occasionally now because he's making himself a target, but if he can help it, and he Anthony plays Astonis pretty smart, so he usually can avoid damage. So
yeah,
you know,
I've noticed, which is why I started going after him a little bit more, just to put a little bit of fear into him.
Yeah.
Like, if so, I see him move over to, like, really far away, it's like, no, I'm just going to have these guys meander over towards him and at least make him worry a little bit.
Yeah. But, I mean, and then you fall back to how, because of my choice of domain, of how Atticus plays in combat, where I cast my 15-foot wall of spirits, and then I let that do the work for me, and if I need to heal, I heal. If I need to cast a cantrip or cast a spell, I cast a spell. But usually that's all it takes. Now, if I had light domain, I would open up a lot more opportunity for me to do a lot more things on that respect. But yeah, so I mean, that's on me. I openly admit the fact that that's on me.
Well,
that's the reasoning why, because I carry that over, and I didn't fully realize the scope of the party and what we really had mm-hmm. in fifth edition. Like, where me being a healing cleric, like, the only time I would say being a healing cleric is a necessary thing if you're playing in a 4-man party that, and you're running something that you're running a thing where your GM's like, hey, short rest, rest are gonna be few and far between. One, two.
Well, funny you say that. Funny you say that, because I can't give away too much, especially for the audience. But one of the next distractions recordings we do, you guys are going to. There's not going to be a lot of chance for rest.
Which is fine. I think the player's handbook breaks it down and says you have time for a short rest. I believe they say the average time should be every other combat, and a long rest should be every, I want to say, four or end of session.
No. Well, we'll find out.
That's what I believe. I haven't read that part of the handbook in a while, but I believe it recommends something along those lines of every two encounters, you can get a short rest, and then every four encounters would quantify a long rest if story makes sense. Like, if you're doing something and it's still like you going through wave and wave of enemies, and you know, you fight, move, but you've only been traveling for 4 hours and you're not in a position really to take a long rest, you can offer up another short rest at best. But yeah, I think it's something like that. I think it's something pretty obscure, where every, you know, you shouldn't be able to get a rest after every fight.
Right.
And that's one of the things. So, I mean, if your DM offers up a rest after every fight, you don't really even need a healer. You could get by off two secondary healers. So, like, you can get by off a paladin and a ranger alone for healing at that point. A paladin with laying on hands.
I don't technically agree with that, only based off of if the majority of your party is really fucked up and you want, and they're, and even if they're spending hit dice, you have a finite number of hit dice, and then when you take your long rest, you only get half of those back. So then if the next day you're blowing through your hit dice again, and then you take another long rest, you're only getting half of your spent hit dice back again. So eventually you're just going to end up running yourself out of hit dice at that point.
Right. Which is a point. But you're looking at how often is that going to happen? I guess you will look at per session. That's going to be what's called a niche situation. And again, it's going to blend on how your party plays. If your party is more of a tactical playing party where they kind of assess the options and then in combat, and you play differently. Like our party, the guys in our group, they're kind of wanton. They just kind of run out and just do what they want.
Yep.
And that makes my job more harder. And this is becoming a slight different tangent, but it's still not, because it's talking about spells. That makes my job.
That's how we justify this shit, people. Magic.
I mean, to be fair, that excuse has been used in television since the beginning of time. How did this guy come back? Our ratings have dropped since we killed this guy off. He should come back to life. How are you going to bring him back? Magic. This is all my children. Magic. He comes back. But yeah, so, I mean, to be fair, so that works out fine. But yeah, so that makes my job a little bit harder. Well, when you have people who play a little bit more, how do I put this? If the best way to describe this, which you'll understand this more than I think the listeners will, Webby, if the D&D party approach combat and approach situation, well, combat specifically, approach combat like our vamp group approaches combat, I would say 70% of the time, my job would be slightly easier.
Mm.
Which, talking on the healing spell side, vamp game, not really a game you need a healer. Yeah, it's nice to have one, but it's not a necessity.
It is not. Yes, true. healers are exceptionally rare in that
they're
game.
They're a luxury, not a requirement. Yes. D&D, you need a healer of some kind. Usually, like, I will say this. So, kicking off of the Ranger and Paladin, I will say if you have a Ranger or Paladin and a Druid, you do not need a Cleric, which is has a lot of healing spells. A Druid taking healing spells is enough to get you through.
I wouldn't take the Ranger thing out of there, because first, they don't have access to like the decent healing spells until later level. I mean,
That's what I'm saying. So you have the, if you have a party of 4 to 5 people, if you have one Druid and either a Ranger or a Paladin, that's enough healing. That should be enough healing to get you through.
See, I'd be more comfortable with if a party had a Druid and a Bard, then I'd feel comfortable not having another.
I mean, that's also another option. The Bard is more along even line. Okay, if you want to stack the healing tier, it's Cleric, Druid slash Bard, and then you have the Ranger Paladin. That is the healing tier of heals. The Paladin is actually above the Ranger slightly because the Paladin gets healing spells on their heal list, and they also get Lay on Hands, where I think the Ranger gets like the herbal where he can make potions or some shit or something like that on his list at one point. But I mean, specifically speaking, the Paladin, because the Paladin's Lay on Hands is, especially as you get higher level, is pretty much just heals. And because it heals flat hit points and not dice, that is immensely more helpful. So it's like, hey, I'm going to spend 2 hit dice. All right, I spend those 2 hit dice. All right, I'm 15 HP away from full. I'm going to give you 15, give this person this, give that person that. And I believe Lay on Hands come, you get all your Lay of Hands back. It's after a short rest or I think it's a long rest. But that resets. So like the Paladin, like if I went in with a Paladin and a Druid, especially if the Druid was, you know, actively knowing, okay, I'm going to have to take healing spells, at least sacrifice one slot for healing spells, I would be fine with that, especially because the Druid doesn't need to be a spellcaster. They can go purely, wild shape and not really care about spellcasting too much.
Right.
And just burn their slots for healing, because it's not a necessity. Like, save their spells literally for just like the occasional buff. I think they get access to giant size later. And then healing spells. And I think that point, that party would survive. That party would be fine. That party may run into slight issues here and there, just off the fact that they only have the Paladin as their sole divine / radiant caster / damage dealer.
Remind me after the recording. I want to ask you a question.
All right. Remind Webby. Webby, you're going robotic on me. It might just be me, though.
Yeah, it might be me. I don't know. I mumble a lot.
You're back to normal now. No. It was
when I mumble, things start fucking up.
It was Skype robotic. It wasn't like, it was. Yeah, I think it was just connections for a second.
Well, listeners, if I went robotic there for you, you're welcome. That's all.
Webby doesn't mean robot. You just have to see it.
It's true. Now, back to witches. In other media. So we talked to tabletop games. We got video games, dude. There's always any type of RPG you play. There's a spellcaster, You get the same types of spellcasters. Like I play WoW, so you're gonna see a lot of similarities between WoW and D&D. You have your priest class, you have your sorcerer class, mm-hmm. you have your warlock class.
I think the quintessential classes in every RPG, the baseline classes, you can break it down into 4.
Oh, you have your druid class, and WoW. I forgot about that.
I'm saying, even if you want to break it down to this, the most basic of basic parts, you're guaranteed a spellcaster. Because what's going to happen is you have the 4 basic classes. You have the tank, you have the damage dealer, you have the spellcaster, and the healer. That's usually the 4 basic,
or if not a spellcaster, a ranged damage dealer.
Yeah.
Of some fashion.
arranged name together in some fashion. But usually they go with a spellcaster, and then you can have the damage dealer be ranged or melee.
Right.
Or something like that. But I mean, if you're breaking it down just into the four categories, you have the healer, which usually has access to spells of some kind. You have the tank, you have the damage dealer, and you have the, you know, the damage dealer, and you, I'm just going to say the arcane. You have the spellcaster of some kind, but not the healing spellcaster. Right. It's usually the four that break down. So, like, the four, that's why people say the four essential classes to take into a D&D situation is a barbarian, a fighter, a wizard, and a cleric. That is, like, the one of the essential four-man party that will, if you see any D&D kind of, like, ripping off of a trope, that's, you're going to get those four archetypes in your group.
Right.
At all times. And then, you know, the rogue is not a necessity. Because you can, you know,
which
a bard,
I find odd, too.
Because this is the thing, a bard can be a rogue. The bard can effectively act like a rogue and do roguish things. The fighter, if wanted to, you could argue and say the fighter is, so you could argue and say, like, things like the paladin and the paladin and I'm trying to think other tank, but I think honestly the only other tank
paladin is, fighter, barbarian.
Yeah. Which if you really wanted to even break it down further, you could actually get rid of the fighter and say the fighter is part of under the tanky. So you could do tank rogue, but especially in D&D 5th, they, you know, if you're talking about that in a lot of games, you have the tank, the fighter, cause then the fighter, yeah, you can build a fighter to basically be a rogue. The only thing you're missing out on is some skills, but you can build a fighter that does all the stuff a rogue does outside of like sneak attack damage and things like that.
The only thing else, I'd have to reread on some of that, but I don't think fighters have access to. Do they have access to tool proficiencies?
Not technically, but through backgrounds, yes.
Because you would have to have proficiency with thieves' tools to be able to pick locks.
Yes.
Which is the main reason that anybody brings a rogue, is to pick locks and find traps.
To backgrounds, you can. You can be an urchin. You could be a fighter who is raised in the street. I mean, so
waste
you could
of
be.
A background.
Not really. I mean, the urchin background is actually pretty decent. It gives you, I think, access to thieves' tools and gives you access to, I want to say bluff. One skill between bluff, sleight of hand, and I want to say one more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, it. You know, there's ways to do it, especially 5th edition. Like, if you're talking 3.5, then your only options for a rogue are really a rogue or a bard. A bard can do it because a bard gets the bardic inspiration, or not inspiration, what they call it, I think Nax, Bard Nax, or somebody they call, I forgot what they call it, 3.5. But they get the fucking extra bardic knowledge, whatever it's called. They get the extra skill. They get extra skills. So, like, they're basically your skill monkeys, and you can put points into any skill in 3.5.
Oh, yeah, the jack of all trades or whatever.
Yeah, they were basically jack of all trades. Bards were. So, you could do, bards could be anything. Bards in 3.5 could, especially with prestige classes. This is a whole conversation. We're going to do a whole episode on just D&D classes.
Yeah, we're gonna round this back out to mages somehow, or to witches. We will do a conversation on D&D classes and breakdowns, and hell, we can even get into like the best which D&D classes work best with each other.
True.
Anyway, witches, they were burnt at stakes a long time ago. They were really gnarly. If people thought you were a witch, they would drown you, and if you didn't drown, you were a witch. But if you did drown, you were dead anyway. So that's neat.
A lot of the witch trials were like that. They were very much things like, oh, well, if you survive, you're obviously a witch. But
right.
If you die, you're human, but you're dead. So you don't get your justice.
Right. Now, oddly, like, witches, there are different schools of magic. Like, we've mentioned a couple of them. Like, you mentioned necromancy quite a few times. Now, necromancy, for the people who don't know, is the practice of conjuring the spirits of the dead, and sometimes going as far as raising them. You also have things like divination magic, which we've talked about. That's more of your religious. I think divination is a lot of like scrying, being able to see and locate objects and people. You have things like illusion magic. That's quite literally what it sounds like. You can create illusions of some form or fashion. This is where I'm going to start drawing a few blanks here, so I might need your help, Devin, but abjuration is one.
Are you talking D&D?
Yeah, just general schools of magic.
You have
in general, you know.
Abjuration.
Now what's abjuration?
Abjuration, I believe, is like wards and protection spells. Okay. I believe
those sigils and stuff like that.
Yes, I believe. I can give you an absolutely term in 2 seconds.
Because see, I like how Final Fantasy did it. Now let's talk Final Fantasy for a second. You wanted to be a damage dealer, you were a black mage. You wanted to be a healer type, you were a white mage. You wanted to be kind of like the bard of D&D, where you were more utility and kind of best of both worlds, you were a motherfucking red mage.
Red mage for life.
So
abjuration spells is a school of magic that deals in protecting spells and suppression of others' magic.
Bam. So counterspell would probably be abjuration.
That it would be, sir.
Okay. So what else do we got on that list?
Conjuration.
Conjuration, obviously. That's making shit out of nothing.
Or summoning creatures to do shit for you.
Out of nothing. Yeah.
Yep. Divination.
Yeah, we talked about that. That's more of like the scrying and locating objects.
Scrying, fortune telling. It's personally my favorite school of magic.
It's not mine. We will get into that.
I love divination magic.
I do love divination magic.
When you're able to do it proper, I love it.
Okay, so this divination is your favorite school. Let's go through the rest of the schools.
Enchantment.
That is taking items and essentially making them better.
Items or people. That's buffs. That's buffs. Whether you're buffing items, you're buffing people, you're buffing other spells.
Yeah. Like enlarge or reduce, I believe, would be enchantment.
That is correct. You have evocation.
Oh, Jesus. What's this one?
Evocation is your damage dealing one. That's
okay, so like fireball.
Fireball.
Disintegrate.
Ray of flame.
Ray of frost.
Ray of frost, I think, is actually necromantic.
Okay, never mind. prismatic spray.
Yep, that would be that. Jesus Christ. prismatic spray. Nice pull. Nice pull, sir.
Okay.
I think Tasha's Hideous Laughter is evocation. No, that's actually a... No, I think it is evocation magic, but it's an evocation that is also a mind-altering. But anyway, that's not... Or it might be illusion. Illusion is one you talked about.
Yep.
Necromancy.
Yep.
And the one I think is your favorite one, and it is probably a close second for me, Transmutation.
Oh, wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, what is Transmutation for the listeners?
As the name suggests, it deals with the transmutation or transformation of objects and people, or the changing of one of their attributes, a.k.a. polymorph.
Yep.
I love polymorph spell. I'm still waiting to pull that out in the pact. I have the ability to pull it out.
For other people who aren't necessarily board game oriented, but you love history and stuff, alchemists would be transmuters.
Yes.
Ability to turn like things like lead into gold, or
I still want to play a character in a game that is reminiscent of Edward Elric. Yeah. It's never going to happen because I can't find a system that has alchemy on that level. Well, actually, no. I know exactly of a system, and I know of a particular path that would let me do it.
Anyway,
but
so
it doesn't exist.
You were wrong. You were wrong with my favorite school of magic.
And I admit that. I was wrong.
I'll give you one more guess.
See, I don't want you to be a schlub. I don't want it to be evocation. I don't want you to be a slub. So I'm gonna go with illusion.
I'll tell you right now, it's neither one of those.
Okay, then I don't know.
It is necromancy.
Okay, I mean, okay, that's fair. That's fair.
I will say, especially I was a huge Diablo 2 fan.
Yep.
And my favorite person on there was the necromancer, and it was all about, hey, I'm just gonna raise a million skeletons and make you guys fight them.
The only reason why that's not my favorite class, I actually really enjoy a lot of spells on necromancy, but it's hard, especially in a D&D setting, to be a good character and justify necromancy. We've had this conversation before, me and you specifically.
Oh yeah,
Shenaticus. You know, it's hard to say.
And especially in a world that I'm code DMing and such, I've given everybody who has the capability of casting spells this same warning about necromancy, and that's if you use it openly and it's a gross use of the power, I'll just say.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Then shit's gonna hit the fan, essentially.
Yep.
In my D&D world, like we've had this chat before, if you piss off your god can take away your powers. And then you're just the dude.
Yep.
Then you guys are gonna be in some trouble until you repent and find a way to make it up to your deity or swap deities.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are capable of swapping deities. You do have free will. Now, that being said, it is extremely hard to be a good aligned person who can use necromancy, which is why necromancy is my favorite school of magic. Because I love, for anybody who really knows me, I love playing the evil person. I love playing the what is it? I think the masochists are the ones who like hurting other people.
Is that correct? No, sadist.
Sadist? Sure.
No, sadist.
That one. Oh yeah, masochists like hurting themselves. Hurt. Yeah. That being said,
so let me ask you a question, Webby.
I will say, hold on, I'm going to give you a little bit of inside knowledge here, since you're the only one on this one, and I don't know who else listens, besides possibly sometimes John, maybe even Ed Quist. I don't necessarily...
Everything.
I think Austin listens to all these, too, so maybe he'll get it. But I know for sure Anthony doesn't listen to these. In the distractions world, my friend, there is a necromancer, and he is, when you think necromancer, and you get that mental image in your head.
That's exactly what he is.
He is that.
I like it.
And he is in the world, so be prepared, that's all.
I once played a necromancer, and his sole reason for being a part of the party was he witnessed one of the other members of the party excel in combat and realized he was a fine specimen and said he's going to follow him around until he dies so he can have him as a cohort.
Nice.
And that was the sole reason why he followed the group around.
Now,
he was just simply waiting for every opportunity for that guy to die.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to tie this back into D&D for just 2 seconds here, folks. I promise, for those of you who don't care for D&D.
It's a big part of our lives.
It is. It won't be very long. I just have a very quick question for Devin.
You haven't
gotten to see one of them in action too much because we ended up stopping that game. So I've played two clerics in various games that we've played.
Mm-hmm.
Both clerics were very different. I want to know which one you liked best and which concept you liked best.
I'm biased.
I know. So my first one, for those listening at home, my cleric worshipped the god of...
Joaquin?
Yeah, it was Joaquin. It was the god or goddess, I believe, of money and wealth. So essentially, I was part of this party. I was told that I was part of this party for a while and that, we, you know, we're all friends. But being a patron saint of Joaquin, I charged every single party member for my services. If they if they were hurt, they had to pay before I would heal them. If they got knocked out, I would loot money out of their coin purse and then heal them. But I would only take the right amount. I wouldn't take their whole coin purse. I wasn't a thief. Devin's character in that particular game, he always paid in advance.
Yeah, I was smart. I just basically did like, all right, I want to live. So I think I just did like a flat 5% off of my gold cut and just sent it straight to him.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, there. If that's how this is going to play out, then so be it.
Now,
and because of that, those characters kind of bonded.
That's true. In more ways than one, I guess. Yeah, which sounds way worse than I meant it to.
It's exactly what you're imagining, people.
Kind of. So my second cleric that I played, we didn't get to play too long. It was the cleric that I played in Rob's Curse of Strahd game. Now, the reason I liked this cleric is I went out of my way and I bought the spellbook cards for the cleric class. So I had all my various cards for each level, so on and so forth. Now, I considered my guy a chaos cleric. And what I mean by that is every day when I went to go prepare my spells, I was able to prepare X amount of spells. So I would shuffle those leveled cards and then just draw them randomly, flip them over, those were my prepared spells for the day. There was no guarantee that I would get anything useful like a heal spell. I would get things like Purify Food and Drink, which, don't get me wrong, good spell, very situational.
Let me, to give you an idea of how much I love that idea because it's close to my heart. I need to find the group to make it work in. I really want to play a sorcerer or play a character of some kind. I probably think a sorcerer would work best and literally do tarot cards and nice. Just a sorcerer because it's legitimately spontaneous casting. Well, so just whatever the cast is going to be, just flip the card over. It's like, oh, hey, we need a protection spell. Oh, well, that's fireball. All right. We're getting fireball. Then I just role play it out like he's trying to do something else and he just gets something else. He'll be a wild mage. It'll be fun. It'll be an extra wild mage on top of that. I would really love to do it. But honestly, in terms of characters, I enjoyed more. I bonded more with the first cleric, but the second cleric just had by happenstance. He got shit on the entirety of that game.
Yeah, it really it was the worst time ever.
He got shit on the entirety of that game, and I actually really enjoyed that character. It was really short-lived, but I enjoyed that character a lot. Again, me and Webby played friends in that. Every game me and Webby playing friends in any game is a curse. If our characters are friends, that game will end.
It's true.
We wrote that game. Me and that characters were friends. Now I'm still waiting. We're waiting on a second season, see what happens on Game of Distractions. Who knows? It might get canceled just because we're friends. Somebody comes down and says,
everybody who listens to this and who listens to Game of Distractions, don't get Devin wrong. My character's dead.
See? One way or another, it happened. One way or another, we're ripped apart.
It's true.
You know what? Well, I'm going to use this opportunity, Webby. Hold on one second.
Okay. I'm not venting.
If you really want to be the super duper fan of...
Uh-oh, Devin's throwing a gauntlet down again.
If you want to be the super duper fan of this, you know what? I like you so much, I can put you on the show for an episode. We can talk about it. If you know how to DM Vampire the Masquerade, and you want to DM it for me and Webby play in a game...
Oh, shit.
Step up. By all means, step up. You will be the challenge super duper fan. You'll be the super duper fan, and you'll be in an episode. And yeah, because we've been looking for someone to DM a game for us, because we just want to be bears. We just want to hang out together. Yep. We just want to be two bears in the forest, chilling out, hanging out, being buddies.
Yep. Doing what bears do, you know, eating campers.
Yep.
They're like soft tacos.
Yep. True.
Well, Devin, we are rolling around that hour 15-ish mark.
Got other stuff to do.
I do. I did get more questions.
Ooh, let's do it.
I don't necessarily know that they're advice, so to speak.
Questions.
I did get three questions. I will just ask the questions. They wanted to remain anonymous, so that's quite all right. I have no problem remaining anonymous. So from Anonymous, what is your most hysterical or ridiculous college memory or the most trouble you've ever gotten into? I didn't go to college. Although I'll preface this one right now with that. But I don't know if you did, but we can go down to just hysterical or ridiculous memory / trouble you've ever gotten into.
Hysterical, most ridiculous memory. I also did not go to, well, I went to community college for about a year and a half.
Devin is more learned than me.
I'm actually in the process of trying to go back to school, but that's a separate issue altogether. Now, moving into what we're doing, and in terms of funniest or most hysterical moments I've ever had. Ironically, probably actually was at a college. So I want to say I was 19 and I was at a college party. I got invited to a college party. We went to a college party and I did a lot of drinking and I was really drunk. And apparently I thought I was going home with my friends. I didn't. I woke up the next morning about 120 miles in the opposite direction.
Nice. Oh God.
So right. I woke up in somebody's house and 120 miles, like the opposite direction. And I was like, oh, hey, this isn't the house. This isn't anybody's house I recognize. And the guy's like, oh yeah, you know, we all kind of, I was like, hey, I'm driving back. You piled in the car with us and we just kept going. You crashed here. And I was like, all right, cool. How do I get home? So I call, my phone was dead. I got a charger. I plugged it in. It was not funny at the time, but, looking back on it, it was hysterical. Cause I just fucking woke up in some, like, you know, they, you know, like that common funny story, like has been going around like, oh, hey, this person just woke up, this random teenager woke up on my couch, fucking broke in my house and slept on my couch. Like, oh, it's kind of was that. I just hopped in somebody's car, thought I was getting the right car. I wasn't. I ended up like 150 miles away from where I wanted to be and had to call somebody to come get me. That was an interesting thing. And I needless to say, I missed work that day. I didn't go to work that day. So, yeah.
I'll go with my most hysterical or ridiculous memory. You know, I honestly can't think of too many that really stand out as funny. This one, every time I'm reminded of it, I can't help but smirk and start laughing. But I remember it was on a day that we were going to be recording Distractions. I was given a cookie to eat as a dessert item. And I did. And I was warned to only eat like a quarter of it. But I ate the whole damn thing. And I felt fine. You know? I DM'd the session for you guys. I felt fine. And then we had like a meeting thing afterwards. A bunch of us all got on a call on Skype. We were all talking about stuff. I just remember my eyes being really heavy. And like, I had no sense of time. And this is what really throws me. This is what makes me laugh so much. And John, I love you. I remember John talking to us, telling us something. I don't remember exactly what the meeting was about, but I remember John specifically was talking. And I cut him off. And I said, John, how fucking long are you gonna fucking talk to us? And he had only been talking for like 4 minutes.
I don't even think it was that long.
And it felt like he had been talking to us for over an hour straight. And like my hand was just pressing on my temples and my eyes were squinting back. And I'm just like, oh my god. So yeah, that makes me laugh. That's I like it when I lose track of time, I suppose. Now, what about the most trouble you've ever gotten into, Devin?
Most trouble I ever got into? Oh, boy.
Now, it doesn't necessarily say that you got caught. Just saying that. It's just the most trouble you've ever gotten into.
I'm trying to... That's hard.
Yeah, mine's really hard, too.
Just to give you an idea, because this one still sticks with me, like, I still look back on this to this day, and I kind of shake my head, like, Jesus, that was dumb. I think I was middle school or high school. I was old enough to drive a golf cart, and right around the time one of the Fast and the Furious movies came out. So I was helping out at this event in the high school parking lot, and I had my current roommate, Alan. Hold on 1 second. I had my current roommate, Alan, with me. In the golf cart, and we were like, his mom's sitting over on the other side of the thing, and she's like, all right, let's go. I'm like, all right. I'm like, well, you know what? We're going to do something cool. And it was the scene in, I think it was like, it might have been Fast and Furious 1. It might have been, I can't remember. Fast and Furious 1 or 2 Fast and Furious. They're driving backwards, and they just like snap the wheel real quick, turn around straight, and keep driving. I'm like, we're going to do it. So I'm in the golf cart. He's like, this isn't a great idea. I'm like, it's fine. Shh, don't worry about it. So I throw the golf cart in reverse, slamming the gas, go back, not crazy fast, but fast enough in a golf cart, you know, where you're going probably like between 10, 15 miles an hour. And then you just do a hard turn.
You just roll the golf cart?
Almost. I threw him out the golf cart. So, and this is all right in front of his mom. Like, I threw him out the golf cart. And then the golf cart was like on two wheels. It went straight. And then I kept driving, and then one of the other guys is like, all right, I think it's time for you to go. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And then so his mom's like yelling at me, and I'm like, to this day, it's not like a super lot of trouble. It wasn't like awful, one of those things. Like, it's hard to pinpoint exactly when I get into trouble a lot for various reasons. It's kind of hard to pinpoint one, but that one sticks with me because I look back on it, I'm like, man, it was one of those ones that I look back, I'm like, that could have ended so much worse than it actually did. And, it's so good because it was one of those things where, like, I knew, looking back, I'm like, I was old enough to know that was stupid, but I did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things. So yeah, that's probably the one I'm going to go with for right now.
Yeah, looking back on it, I've done a lot of stupid stuff, but at the same time, I regret none of it. Like, I would do it the same way again. Most trouble I've ever gotten into. Well, I guess this could be taken two different ways. So, either I've done something bad that, you know, was very bad and I could, you know, could possibly have had legal ramifications, so on and so forth. Or, like, trouble as in, like, something that I couldn't get out of. So, I'll give you both. I've popped someone's tires a few times with a knife, like while they were sitting in their car at a stoplight. Been in the wrong place at the wrong time. I got jumped by a few Hispanic people one night. It didn't end well for them. I'm a big guy, for those of you who know me. And, the one guy decided that he was going to punch me, and he chose to punch me in the stomach. And it was like, that's the most cushioned area. Now, if you're going to go...
Probably Jon Snow.
If we're going to go trouble that I've gotten into that I couldn't get out of... Okay. I won't name drop the place. I worked at an oil distribution warehouse, let's say that. And, every so often... My buddy Scott would just jump on my back, and he would just wrap his arms around my neck, wrap his legs around my waist, and he would just start humping me. And I'd literally just start slamming him into the walls, just doing anything to try to scrape him off of my back. And so that kind of turned into him. He would give me a little bit of forewarning before doing it, and he would say, "Hey, Webby, looks like you need a hug." So then he'd jump on my back. That turned into progressively over time. This one time, I was filling 5-gallon buckets of oil, and I heard over the PA system throughout the entirety of the warehouse, my buddy come on and say, "Hey, everybody, I think Webby needs a hug." And I just stopped filling pails. I stood up. I looked down one of the aisles, and all of a sudden, three people poked their head out and looked directly at my department. I fucking ran. And I ran into the tank farm where we hold all of our oil. And what do I do? Why do I think not running is a good idea? I fucking climb a ladder to go to the top of one of the tanks. And I'm like, oh, they'll never see me up here because people don't look up. That is not the case. When you have a big guy like me at the top of a tank farm, I'm pretty much the first thing people see. So they all waited for me to come down because I had to eventually, and then they all jumped on me. It was a pig pile on me, and I didn't really care for it. Yeah.
For a second, I thought you were going to say you were like, you tried to like Looney Tunes them and you dumped one of the oil drums out in front of a door.
So, no, I mean, that would have been good.
Escape. I was like, damn, really? You just wasted.
I do know.
Oil for that?
One of the truck drivers that used to deliver oil to us.
Uh-huh.
Because I worked in the department that had to offload all the trucks, so I got to know all the truck drivers really well. I'd gone outside one day, and now, me and this one truck driver, we had a very weird relationship. We were always very rude to each other, but in a joking manner. But he was definitely scared of me. I'm a pretty imposing person when I get mad. I was filling pails, and all of a sudden it's wintertime, and I get fucking pelted in the side of the head with a snowball. And I look, and he's just standing there in the bay door laughing his ass off. So I get up, and I just fucking start running at him, and I chase him across the whole parking lot. Well, the next day, I walk outside, and there's a Dunkin' Donuts cup upside down on my antenna. It had leaked coffee on my truck. And I was like, what the fuck? So I went around to everybody I knew who worked there, and I asked, hey, who did you put this on my truck, blah, 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 blah. I inquired, and I found out it was this truck driver, you know, upping his practical jokes. So that day when the lunch truck came, we had one of those roach coaches, you know, who'd come in at the same time every day, and we'd buy lunch off the truck. I bought a fish sandwich, and I loaded it up with tartar sauce, and then I shoved it underneath this truck driver's seat. And for over a month, he couldn't find it. And I felt really bad after, you know, the first week. But then I just figured, well, I've gone this far. I can't fess up to it now. So, yeah, that was pretty bad of me.
That's funny.
Don't necessarily know he deserved that. Anyway, next question real quick. We got two more of these. What's your motto or the advice that you live by, Devin?
The biggest advice I live for and my biggest motto is probably, this is going to sound really bad, but it's probably fuck it.
Okay.
And I know that, I mean, but it's true though, to an extent. I mean, and let me explain that a little bit. I don't just mean like, you know, just fuck everything. But I mean, like, if you ever find yourself at a cross of action, like, should I do this? Should I not do this? You only live once, which I guess is the actual true motto there. You live once. If what you're going to do is not going to actively kill you, fuck it. Like,
yeah.
You know, if you're not going to ruin a relationship, you're not going to ruin like a long-term friendship, you're not going to ruin, like, perfect private example. If you're going to ask out that girl, like, should I ask her out or should I not ask her out? People always say, like, and it's very much true, the regret of you not asking her out is worse than the rejection of you asking her out and her saying no. So I very much recently, but in the past few years, I've really embraced the term of fuck it and just said, why not? You know, fuck it. Why not?
Nice.
And just do it. I mean, so that's mine.
Mine is a Irish blessing. I read this years and years and years ago, and it's stuck with me ever since. I think it's all around good advice. And that's, may you be a half hour into heaven before the devil knows you're dead. That's as simple as that. Because who are we joking? Everybody who listens to this, if you are listening, you've done some bad shit. You know where you're going when you die. Let's just hope you go the other way. So, three? The next one?
Yep.
What is your favorite song to sing to? We've actually talked about this previously before, I think. Maybe not on an SU, but...
That's hard.
I have two. I have two that if they are played on karaoke machines, as long as I'm drunk, I will always sing along. And if I'm not drunk, I will always sing along in my head. And that is I'm a Believer by the Monkees. And Eye of the Tiger.
If I had to go two for me, and this is just pulling off the top of my head, but one would be Bohemian Rhapsody.
All right.
And then the second one would probably be Paradise City.
All right.
That's my jam.
All right, well, I think that's about it, Mr. Devin. So where can people find you on the interwebs?
You guys can find me at... I actually just changed my Twitter, and I forgot what the hell I changed it to.
Shit.
So you guys...
I don't like it. I don't like it already.
You do. You do. I want to say it is. Actually, Webby, you know what? You go first. And I'll let you know what mine is 2 seconds.
Well, I'm gonna plug everything else. That's why I'm usually making you go first.
All right. You guys can find me at CZF300.
Okay, there you go. You guys can follow me on Twitter at JaxForestWalker, all one word. Check out everything else we do at distractionsmedia.com. We are doing a live stream charity event in December. I believe it's December 2nd, starting at noon. You guys can follow us and watch us on Twitch at Distractions Media. No, on twitch.tv/distractionsmedia. This year we're raising money for Anxiety Gaming. Other than that, rate and review us. Honestly, don't care if you give me a shitty-ass review. Just rate that shit 5 stars. You know you want to. And I feel like I'm missing something. If anytime you have suggestions for more future episodes, feel free to email me at simplyunprofessional@gmail.com. And I'm pretty sure that's about it. So until next time, everybody. Fuck Booster Gold.
Fuck Booster Gold, and you can follow me at DMP_Pookie.
I don't like it.
I don't care what you like. I'm kidding, I love you.